New Year's Eve is still just a couple of weeks away, but for all intents and purposes, the boxing calendar came to a close this past Saturday night when Floyd Mayweather sort of annihilated Ricky Hatton, and a lot of people were not surprised with the result. Some had it ending a little earlier, some had it going the full 12 rounds, but the man on the line with me had it dead on, TKO in the 10th, and that's why, my friends, we call him the sweet scientist. Of course, I'm talking about Lars from Nomas Online, nomas-nyc.com. You can hear, you can read great reviews of the fight over on his website. And Lars, second big fight in a row that you get it dead on. You correctly predicted the Kelly Pavlik, Jermaine Taylor bout. What made you think that this bout was going to go 10 and then down goes Hatton?
Well, I first have to say, just in the cause of humility, that I did have it wrong with Cotto and Sugar Shane. I had Cotto stopping Sugar Shane, so that was one big fight in the middle there that I didn't quite nail. But it's true, I did nail the Pavlik fight, and I did nail the Floyd fight. I obviously was very satisfied to nail it. That always makes you feel like the Mac, but to be honest, I don't feel like I was making any shocking news with my prediction. I feel like anybody, if you didn't get too swayed by the propaganda of 24/7, anybody who's seen Floyd fight and anybody who's seen Hatton fight had a pretty good idea of what was going to happen in there. I mean, with the way Hatton dives in face first and the way Floyd is just a sharp shooting machine, you knew that Hatton was going to eat a lot of big shots. And for all his talk about his superhuman will, as a natural 140, I was pretty certain that he was going to go down. When I was on with you talking about it last Wednesday, I was still more in the realm of, I think it could be a TKO, but you always have to wonder about a decision. There was something about the last episode of 24/7 and Hatton's demeanor in there. And I saw it in the pre-fight warm-ups in the dressing room. He looked really out of his element to me, really tense. And I just thought, this guy is ripe to go down. And so with Floyd, you always know he was throwing some bombs in there, but you always know that he's not a one punch guy. So, it's going to be accumulated knockout. So I figured anywhere from 8 to 11 and just went with 10. And I hit it on the nose.
And what did you think of Floyd Mayweather's performance? I mean, like you said, most people predicted a victory by Floyd, yet certainly at the beginning of the round, and I know you kind of disagreed with this, but I'd like to get into that in just a second, but I thought Ricky Hatton was very aggressive and for a second there sort of had Floyd back on his heels. Obviously, Floyd's been in this game a long time and he knows how to weather the storm and came back stronger than ever as each round went by. What did you think of Pretty Boy Floyd's continually dominating every single opponent and beating Hatton to every step of the bout?
Well, I thought that Floyd was masterful. I have to say that I know that it's not going to be a very popular assessment, but I was more impressed with the way he handled Oscar, just because I thought he was in against a little heavier artillery with Oscar, and that didn't end in quite such a satisfying fashion. Obviously, this was a much more satisfying fight, but to my eyes, he was also in there with a much less impressive opponent. I was still very impressed. I was very impressed at the level that I'm frequently impressed with athletes of, that entire arena with the drunken British, morons singing their songs. And then it seems like everybody in the arena is against the guy. And then Ricky Hatton, I felt like, true to form, was fighting a pretty dirty fight. He basically wrestles. It's borderline UFC territory, what he's doing in there. He's certainly not boxing. Hey, and if it was a UFC fight, that would be a beautiful thing to see. But easy, calm down. He's frenetic. He's incredibly active. I feel like a lesser man than Floyd, as I wrote today in Nomas, might have lost his cool a little bit. And then that might have had some dire consequences for him. He did you know, it seemed like almost lose his footing. It was unclear to me. There did seem to be a punch that was a part of that sequence. It kind of looked like he lost his balance in the first round. But otherwise, I have to say, I saw what the announcers were saying, which is that, boy, he looks uncomfortable. He's never looked so uncomfortable in a fight before with this type of pressure. That's the way I felt about the first three rounds of the Oscar fight. That's when I thought, I saw a look in Floyd's eyes of, Jesus, this guy is big, and he's not slow either. You know, I mean, there was a real size differential in that fight, and I thought Floyd really took stock of, hey, I got to really be careful in here. With Hatton, I never really thought I saw Floyd out of his comfort zone. You know, when they were in the center of the ring, Floyd was snapping his head with these huge shots. And then when Hatton would bull him into the ropes with that, you know, Tasmanian devil routine, even there I thought Floyd was getting the better of the exchanges and landing the more meaningful punches. So I didn't see very much that Ricky Hatton did effectively all night. You know, I didn't see him lean, I didn't see a single clean, damaging blow, and that I thought was he was a little quicker than I think Floyd expected him to be, but that I thought really told the tale, because he did land a few stiff jabs in the first round, and they really seemed to make no impact on Floyd whatsoever, and that I thought had a big effect on the way the fight went, because I thought very early on Floyd took stock of what kind of power he was facing and thought, you know what, I'm not going to get knocked out in this fight. This guy can't punch worth a damn. And he really can't, you know, he doesn't punch. I don't think he punches that well, even for a 140. And so for a guy like Floyd, who's a bigger guy than Hatton, he was in no danger, I think. And I think he was aware of that very early in the fight. And I think it made the fight not tremendously difficult for him. I mean, Chris, you see him after the fight. Didn't look to me like he'd had a brisk workout. I think Floyd probably had some harder days in the gym, to be honest.
You know, it's interesting to know that when you bring up the fact that Hatton was kind of employing this UFC-style clutching and grabbing in the fight, that his camp following the fight said that they were really upset with referee Joe Cortez for always pulling them apart and not allowing Ricky Hatton to get into any type of rhythm. They thought that he totally threw him off. What do you make of Camp Hatton's assertion that referee Joe Cortez is to blame for Hatton's poor performance?
Well, they're following the lead on that. I mean, Larry Merchant was saying that early in the fight. You know, Larry Merchant loathes Floyd Mayweather, so it's pretty clear bias on that case. It was pretty difficult to say. I think Hatton's style is such that, well, what do you expect Floyd to do? Let him do that? You know, I mean, Hatton expects that what's going to happen is that he's going to bull forward like that with that perpetual motion machine, and that you're going to keep moving backwards, and that gives him the entire advantage of the fight. Floyd, you know, like a skilled boxer, I mean, it's boxing 101. You know, it's one of the instincts that you learn that's counter to human instinct. You know, human instinct, when somebody throws a punch at you, is to draw away from that punch. And if you do that in the boxing ring, you're in big trouble. You have to move into punches. That's what slipping a punch is all about. So Floyd was basically, oftentimes, he'd either go back into the ropes and let that little game happen, or he'd stand his ground and step forward, at which point they just banged into each other. And there was nothing more to happen there. Like, so I think it's malarkey, to be honest. I didn't see what rhythm Hatton lost. I didn't see what he was going to do. You know, he would have done it once or twice in the fight. He would have done something. And, you know, and then you would have said, oh, okay, that's what he never got to do because of Joe Cortez. So I think it's ridiculous. I think it's just sour grapes.
Sixth round, Ricky Hatton gets the point deduction, a very weird decision on his part for the punch in the back of the head once Floyd Mayweather was clearly between the ropes and kind of acting, but was falling over. I mean, there seemed to be no reason for that punch. Did you view that as sort of the official changing of the tide? I mean, from that point on, Hatton certainly did absolutely nothing in terms of positive boxing. from the 6th all the way to the 10th. I mean, like you said, before then he had certain flashes of greatness, but nothing extraordinary. But I really thought that the point deduction in the 6th was the official point where he was out of the fight. Would you agree with that?
I thought the cut was the turning point in the fight. That was when I saw a different type of desperation in Ricky Hatton, and I thought that the main thing that happened, I mean, to be honest, I didn't think there was really a turning point. The turning point in the fight was the moment that they stepped in the ring together, because, you know, the same thing happened from the beginning of the fight to the end of the fight. The main thing, and Hatton was going to lose no matter what he did. I mean, despite the announcers calling of the fight, which was kind of preposterous, you know, the judges, I'm not sure that I agreed that it was as lopsided as the judges had it, but I think it was closer to what the judges had than what Lamps and the gang were calling the fight as being very close. But as far as Ricky Hatton's, you know, what made it seem like it might be close to somebody who wasn't paying close attention to who was actually getting punched or not was that Hatton was so frenetic in his motion. And that's, you know, that's like an optical illusion in fights. The guy who's moving forward, the guy who's moving the most, the guy who seems to be throwing the most punches can seem as if he's the guy that's dominating the action. And I thought that when Hatton got cut, he got a little desperate and he started to waste a lot of energy, which even he said going into the fight is something that he couldn't do. And so the turning point for Hatton in terms of creating this effect of pressure and the reason that he got knocked out, you know, he might have been, if he'd been able to keep up the rugby match, you know, he might not have gotten knocked out, because at least at that point he was so close to Floyd that Floyd couldn't really open up on him. But as soon as he tired and he couldn't keep that relentless pressure on Floyd, then it was just like, you know, that was just a shooting gallery for Floyd. I mean, Christ, boy, he was really snapping Hatton's head around in there. So I thought the cut made him lose his cool a little bit, and he really went for broke, at which point he might have, there was a round in there that I remember he won because it seemed like Floyd said, all right, I'm going to let you do this for a round and waste your time and waste your energy. And you know, in a round there, nobody, where nothing happens, the guy who is being more aggressive, you got to give him the round. But I thought ultimately it worked against Hatton in the end. And so to me, the cut, the point deduction obviously upset him. But it was pretty clear to me. I mean, as soon as I saw it, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? He very clearly, and there was just no way to look at what he did and not say, hey, he just punched a guy in the back of the head. There it was. So it's clearly against the rules. There's just nothing you can do about it.
At this point, are you going to start watching HBO telecasts on mute? Because for all their faults, and I know you don't watch the UFC regularly, Mike Goldberg and Joe Rogan, who call the UFC fights, are so unbiased compared to what, you know, Jim Lampley and Larry Merchant and Emmanuel Stewart nowadays, the way they call fights. I mean, it's really an absolute joke. And you touched on this in our interview and in other interviews that we've had together in the past. I mean, why? What possible reason can you have for these guys, other than the fact that, sure, Larry Merchant doesn't like Floyd Mayweather and whatnot? But I mean, it's really at this point borderline unprofessional how biased they are when they call some of these big bouts.
Yeah, I've seen it before. They don't like Bernard either. That's one that really sticks in my mind. Both the Bernard Hopkins Jermaine Taylor fights, I thought that it was very clear from the start that they were very invested in calling the fight for Jermaine. They don't like Floyd. In general, I got to say, I don't mind those guys. Larry Merchant is whatever he is. I was surprised to see him on that fight. I thought that there had been a shift where Kellerman was now the main guy and Larry Merchant was the boxing dark guy. So I don't know what happened there. I have to say, I was mostly surprised with Manny Stewart kind of going with that party line. Because usually I find Manny Stewart's assessments to be just the most incisive commentary on the sport. And so for that reason, I would never turn it off so long as he was on there. It didn't surprise me, because I know of their animus towards Floyd. I know that they were invested in Floyd losing. Certainly the most interesting thing that could have happened in that fight is for Floyd to get knocked down. That would have generated the biggest buzz for the fight. And so you can't discount that aspect of selling the fight there. You know, Cosell used to do that in his glory. I remember watching some dogs of fights, and Cosell's yammering away like it's, you know, like it's Ali Frazier in there. I mean, so it happens with sportscasters. It's part of their business. In this fight, I couldn't help but feel like part of it was a real animus towards Floyd and a desire to see him lose. And that was annoying. It created some stress for me watching the fight because I thought that what they were saying and what I was seeing were so completely disparate that I thought, man, are other people seeing it the way they're seeing it? Because if they are, man, you know, I was really concerned that there would be an injustice. I mean, only for the first couple of rounds. By about the fifth, I can't imagine anybody looking at that thing and thinking that Haddon was winning. But yeah, it definitely annoyed me. There's no doubt about it.
Following the bout, Floyd Mayweather in his post-fight press conference said that Ricky Haddon was the toughest opponent he had ever faced. Now, is this just the usual love fest after, you know, all the months of training and the hype and then the actual fight itself, or do you actually believe Ricky Haddon was the toughest man to ever face Floyd Mayweather in the ring?
Boy, I don't think Ricky Haddon was in the top five, you know, so I'd say no. Not even close. I mean, what's he going to do? He's basically, he might as well be in an arena in Manchester. You know, the whole place is filled with British fans. Plus, Floyd was obviously in a pretty lovey-dovey mood. Although he now seems to retire after every fight, it really seems like he might mean it this time. And, you know, the way he came down while Lamps and Merchant were on camera doing their wrap-up and got involved in that, he really seemed to be saying a genuine goodbye. And in that moment, you know, a strange thing about Floyd, because he plays that loudmouth Ali-like villain role to the hilt. And then after the fights, he's always incredibly gracious. You know, in stark contrast to, say, Ali, you know, in his prime, who could be like that, but often after a fight that he had talked a lot of smack about would be more in an eat your words mode, you know, or I told you. Floyd after fights is usually pretty gracious. And so, yeah, I think he was feeling a lot of love in there. I think he was thrilled that he knocked him out the way he did, you know, and rightfully so. And so I think he was just giving him all the credit. It was funny after, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but immediately after the fight, when Floyd went over to hug Haddon in the traditional sort of boxer hug, you know, and he took his face in his gloves, boy, did Ricky Haddon look like he just wanted to get away from Floyd. You know, he was like, yeah, yeah, mate, you know, leave me alone. You know, and Floyd just wouldn't let him go either. I thought, oh, God, what an uncomfortable moment. So I think Floyd was just being gracious. I don't think Haddon is anywhere near. I mean, Christ, you consider that Haddon was a tougher challenge than Castillo. Castillo almost beat Floyd. A lot of people think he did beat Floyd. So.
And what about those talks of his potential retirement? Seems to be saying this after every one of his big fights lately. And like you said, really, when I saw him go up to Lampley and Merchant, it did seem like some sort of footage that we'd see in the Floyd Mayweather's Sports Century or something, like his crowning moment as he's, you know, walked off into the sunset. Do you actually believe that Floyd will now hang up the gloves with a potential mega fight against Miguel Cotto seemingly on the horizon?
Well, I am of two minds on this count. The one angle tells me, yes, that Floyd's going to retire. Because although I think a fight with Cotto, well, first let me say that there's no fight out there that I want to see more than Floyd Cotto. I think it is the Ali Frazier fight of our generation, and I honestly don't know who would win. You know, the guys were very invested in saying this past Saturday night, well, Ricky Haddon really bought the best out of Floyd Mayweather. I don't think that's true for a minute, but I think Miguel Cotto would, and I'd love to see it. So that said, I also see good reasons why Floyd would duck that fight. He's been tucking it for a while. you know, he's never really addressed the idea of fighting Cotto. It's Cotto really punishes his opponents, and Floyd is a safety first kind of guy. You know, I think Floyd would have been pretty content to stay retired after the Oscar fight, you know. But then Ricky Hatton's called him out, and Floyd sees this undersized British fighter who he knows is not going to give him much of a fight, and who's got this immense following, you know. I mean, it was a really no-risk, huge reward situation for Floyd. Cotto is a smaller reward and an infinitely bigger risk. Cotto is a real punisher in the ring, and Floyd might lose, you know. So on that score, I see good reason for Floyd to duck that fight. And only recently have I read some stuff about this feud between Floyd and Bob Arum, which is now seems to be stretching to an idea of a feud between Floyd and Cotto that goes back to their days as both being Bob Arum fighters. You know, Floyd used to be promoted by Bob Arum, and now he promotes himself. And so there's been some talk that that's the reason why Floyd has always ignored Miguel Cotto. But now I'm reading this stuff about how Floyd, back when Floyd was a Bob Arum fighter and Cotto started to emerge, that Floyd was disrespectful to him. And I've never heard this stuff before, and that's what makes me a little suspicious. Suspicious at the level of, obviously, you know, a la Oscar Vargas, you know, fights gain infinitely more juice in the media when it seems like there's some real personal grudge match going on. You know what I mean? And in that I've never read about this stuff before, and that it's suddenly surfacing in the press now, I think, is this the grassroots movement? Is this the first wave of the press that's going to lead to this fight getting announced? So in conclusion, obviously, I just don't know. I don't know what Floyd's going to do. He retired after he fought Baldomir. He retired after he fought Oscar. So on that score, it seems difficult to trust him. In that, you know, I also read some talk about a possible Oscar rematch with Floyd. I can't believe that would happen, although who knows, you know. But outside of an Oscar rematch, which seems a little strange to me, the only fighter out there for him to fight is Cotto. If he fights anybody else, he's going to be accused of ducking Cotto, you know. And nobody else, like, I don't know why Paul Williams would be a frightening opponent for him. Chris, he would tower over him. You know, who's he going to fight? Margarito? I don't know who else he's going to fight besides Cotto. So in that, that's the only opponent out there waiting for him. There's good reason for him to retire, basically. So we'll just have to wait and see. I hope it happens. Boy, I hope it happens.
Yeah, can you imagine Cotto Mayweather at Madison Square Garden on Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend? That would be insane. I mean, Cotto Mosley was absolutely nuts. 2 months, more than like 6 months after, or 4 5 months after Puerto Rican Day Parade, and it seemed as though we were smack dab right in the middle of Hiram Bithorn Stadium in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Unbelievable, unbelievable atmosphere when Miguel Cotto fights, especially in New York. But you know, you talk about Oscar De La Hoya, and count me as one of those who does not want to see a rematch against Floyd Mayweather. But I was watching him in his front row seat during the bout, and I couldn't quite understand or make out who he was in fact rooting for, because we all know that he was kind of co-promoting this bout with Mayweather Promotions, yet we know about his interest of potentially fighting Ricky Hatton as well. I mean, who knows if that's actually for real or not. What do you make of Oscar De La Hoya and his future? Because he said he's going to be fighting next year. Is it going to be, in fact, the Manny Pacquiao bout, or is there a chance that Ricky Hatton will take one more big bout above his natural 140-pound weight and up against Oscar De La Hoya?
Well, Oscar De La Hoya, here I have a few things to say about him. First, I have to take it back to 24/7 and say worst cameo 24/7 appearance ever. Like, you remember that when he showed up at Hatton's training camp?
Yeah.
It was so staged, and he was so fake-seeming. And then, you know, and what I thought was really the most artificial moment, where he literally seemed like he was reading lines off of cue cards, where he was in the ring supposedly showing Ricky Hatton some tricks, you know, as to how to beat. And he said he'd gotten them directly from Floyd Sr., who he just talked to on the phone. And he said, because, you know, they don't get along. And it was so fake feeling. And then I don't know if you read this, but Floyd Sr. evidently came out and said, that's bullshit. <You know? laughs> And he said, I haven't spoken to Oscar since the press conference after he fought my son. I doubt he even has my phone number.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe that. You know, that was really amazing to me. Oscar, what a charlatan that guy is. As to who Oscar's going to fight next, the Hatton buzz seems to be on. I don't know who Oscar was rooting for, but obviously Hatton's going to fight again. Obviously Hatton's entourage, Hatton's fans aren't going anywhere. And after the fight, Oscar, in press conferences, expressed definite interest in the possibility of fighting Hatton. He said, the reason why the fight would be so viable is because it would be such a perfect mixing of styles. It would be a real clash of the titans. I'm thinking, yeah, right. You know, plus, isn't that what they're calling the Roy Jones, Felix Trinidad fight? Yeah. Anyway, so he used that line. It would be a real clash of the titans, he said. And he said that the main thing was that he was working out in the gym right now and trying to explore whether he could still make 147, which is where the fight would have to be fought at. So I know that Oscar wants a stadium fight. If I was a betting man right now, and we all know how the odds seem to turn in Large's favor.
Yes.
If I was a betting man right now, I'd say that Oscar and Hatton are going to fight at Wembley Stadium. Oscar wants a stadium fight. He talked about Dodger Stadium. I don't think there's an opponent out there for him right now that could fill Dodger Stadium. Hatton has frequently talked in the past about fighting at Wembley Stadium, and it just all seems to be coming together. That seems to be where it's drifting. Hatton, Oscar, and Wembley Stadium in May. We'll see, but it makes a lot of sense. And it's in keeping with Oscar's general approach right now, which seems to be to fight guys that either he knows he can beat or knows aren't going to hurt him. You know, like a Floyd fight, he couldn't have known whether he was going to beat Floyd or not, but he knew that he wasn't going to get really, really injured by Floyd and Mayorga, you know. So Hatton is an opponent who I'm sure, I mean, God, I think about how much bigger, I mean, Oscar would have to make 147, but still, when I think about how much bigger Oscar was than Floyd, imagine him fighting Hatton. It's a crappy fight. I really don't give a crap about it. You know, I could care less about it, but I think it's going to happen. Yeah. As for Pacquiao, you know, there's a lot of talk about Pacquiao after that fight. Read a lot about how, you know, of various commentators saying, hey, Manny Pacquiao, pay attention. This is what happens to fighters who have power, pressure fighters who have power when they step out of their weight class, you know, which for Manny Pacquiao, if an Oscar De La Hoya fight, I know Oscar can't make 140, so he's looking at jumping three weight classes.
Yeah.
You know, he's looking at going from junior lightweight to welterweight to fight Oscar. So yeah, there was a lot of talk about that.
Speaking of crappy fights that you don't care to see, how about the undercards? Was there anything that you came out thinking, that guy kind of impressed me? We know about Jeff Lacy and his victory over the contender boy, Peter Manfredo. We didn't get to see Matthew Hatton fight, which I was very excited about. But anything of note on the undercard of Mayweather-Hatton?
No. Daniel Ponce de Leon looked terrible, I thought. And Jeff Lacy is just done. Jeff Lacy is just done. I mean, when I think about what Calzaghe did to Peter Manfredo, the idea that Peter Manfredo was boxing Jeff Lacy was humiliating. I thought he looked terrible. So no. Terrible undercard too. Boy, they really shamed themselves for that. You have to wonder if it was a little strategic in terms of not having any fights that were going to get anybody worked up to maintain all of the focus and energy, which they knew they were going to have no matter what, towards the Hatton Floyd fight, because it was a terrible undercard. That Seeing Peter Manfredo again, I hope I never see that guy box again. Why am I watching that dude fight?
It's really unbelievable because you mentioned that they might not want to have the audience blow their load, so to speak, until the main event. But you have this huge crowd, you have this amazingly large pay-per-view audience sure to come, and then you have all these celebrities. Why not try to make an actual viable undercard, one where you can build some new stars? And again, I hate to harp on it, but you look at UFC 79 and the undercard is better than the actual main event. It was until Matt Serra pulled out, and now George St. Pierre coming in is definitely a great main event. But it just seems as though every chance boxing has, and the last time we saw this was with Mayweather De La Hoya, they just put out a stinker of an undercard. But maybe they'll learn from that in 2008. Final question before we let you go. Mark Cuban holding the belt, coming out with Floyd Mayweather to Born in the USA. You must have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I thought it was great. I as I wrote on Nomads, I wrote a pretty pointed piece about the way that I think that race affects the way people respond to Floyd, and how it reminds me of the way that I think that Ali was perceived in the 60s. And so the Born in the USA thing was, it ended up seeming comic, but it seemed a little sad to me too, because I honestly believe that Floyd thought that he would have a little more love as an American fighting a British guy than he ultimately did. You know what I mean? I felt a little bad about that. Obviously he plays the villain, and that's his choice. But generally, in a villain scene, when it's your villain going up against another country's, man's man, you side with your villain. You know what I mean? And so I thought that he expected the fact that he chose to go after Born in the USA with no kind of spectacle. You know what I mean? Usually Floyd's entrances are hilarious. I mean, you think of the entrance to the Baldomir fight when he's got the pink gloves and he's wearing the Roman, gladiatorial armor, and he's being carried. I mean, and the look on his face, I thought that was very, very funny. And then the sombrero into the Oscar fight was brilliant, and so I expected something like that, and seeing him come out very starkly and no nonsense to Born in the USA, I thought, wow, I think that he thinks that this is too patriotic a moment to be flamboyant in his way. And what he doesn't realize is that no one's behind him. He's got no one, And I gotta say, I felt a little bad for him. Yeah, Mark Cuban and Wayne Newton, though. Jesus Christ.
It was just unbelievable. Mark Cuban gave me a total pro wrestling vibe out there. Like, he really took this seriously. He thought he was like Bobby the Brain Heenan coming out with one of his wrestlers. And Wayne Newton was just like, just put on his makeup and an extra shot of Botox and had no idea what the hell he was
exactly.
doing out there.
And like, it just popped like two Vicodins and had a couple Glenlivets, I felt the same way. Like, the look on Wayne Newton's face, he was like, what's going on here? I don't even know how to begin to think about this experience. So yeah, it was ridiculous. There's no doubt about it, but that hell of a fight, really good for boxing, really good for boxing that he knocked him out. And it was such a beautiful knockout, on the whole. I got to say, I mean, beyond Cuban and Wayne Newton, I was actually excited, and just because I'm such a big boxing fan, to see when they showed Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, I thought to myself, boxing is back. Because what the hell are those two doing in a fight? It's not even, Floyd and Ricky Hatton, they're big, but still, I just thought, man, boxing's got some real buzz that they can bring out that type of A-lister to the house. So, yeah, good fight for boxing. Looking forward to seeing what happens next year. I think it's going to be a good year.
Yeah, the power of 24/7 was surely on display. Saturday night, Mayweather Hatton. Great stuff, Lars. Like I said, nomas-nyc.com. Unbelievable. I think there's three right now, or there might be two. Three great reviews on the fight, breaking down both Hatton and Mayweather following the bout and where both men stand now. Unbelievable stuff. And I know there won't be that many big fights for the rest of the year, but we'll be sure to have something to talk to you about. Anyways, I mean, we could even talk about old fights on ESPN Classic. You always bring it strong.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. We'll talk soon.